This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all of those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Our colleague Ezra Ginsberg under the weather today. We wish him well. So alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. We start on this Saturday afternoon with last night's Jets-Blackhawks game in Chicago, a game that really, Richard, even almost 12 hours later, a little more than 12 hours after the conclusion of that game, the city of Winnipeg is still fired up over the result. Obviously, the Jets 4-2 victory, the cross-check, the dirty cross-check on Matthew Perreault, and we'll get to that all, of course, throughout the show here, and really the end result, which is the big win for the Jets. Three wins in three games the Jets have played in Chicago this season, and we'll break down the goals, goal by goal, coming up. Why so much success for the Winnipeg Jets against the really perennial Stanley Cup contender, perennial Stanley Cup favorite, the Chicago Blackhawks so far?
It's a really good question, Drew. I mean, even if I told you the Jets matched up really well against the Chicago Blackhawks, you would say, well, they're not going to win three games in a row in the United Center over the course of a season. That's just completely unexpected. Now, one of the things that the Jets can do with Chicago is they can skate. And the Jets are becoming a very difficult team to have become, a very difficult team to play against. I think their defense, and now with a healthy defense, now I'm saying this taking into account the fact that they beat Chicago in Chicago a few weeks back without a healthy defense.
Right.
So, I mean, any way you spin it, they do match up speed-wise, and they seem to match up against those teams. Like, I think they still have some trouble with kind of the bigger cycle teams, although with now Buffalo back on defense, you're going to have less of a problem with that.
The Los Angeles and the Anaheims.
But San Jose's and Chicago, they can skate with those teams, and they can keep up. And so if they can make sure that those teams are kept to the outside a bit and there's not as many defensive breakdowns as there were in the past, like last year or the beginning of this season, then they're in all these games. And again, you know, yesterday's a good example. But if you take a step back and say, okay, the Jets go into Arizona and they lose, and then they string off, what is it, nine of their next 10 points.
Yeah.
It's an incredible run, and they're on fire right now. And they can't do anything wrong, and credit to them, because they're putting in the effort, and we're going to talk about Paul Maurice later, Drew. But to me, we can talk all we want about systems. We can talk all we want about this and that. The biggest thing that Paul Maurice has brought to the table, as far as I'm concerned, is that his team plays hard. And a lot of teams in the National Hockey League don't play as hard as the Jets do. This is an effort thing, a work ethic thing. There's nothing they're doing. I mean, there's some things I like about their forecheck and certain different things that they're doing. But at the end of the day, there's nothing, there's not rocket science that the systems that these teams are employing. They're very similar, most of them, okay? And I like that they've adopted, you know, the umbrella and that 1-3-1 power play format and all that. But it's a copycat league. If you look at the league, everybody's doing what everybody else is doing for the most part, you know?
Sure. There's no revolutionary systems.
No, not really, you know. But so then it comes down to how do you motivate your team and how do you have your team and does your team play hard? And they're playing as hard for him as for any players are playing for a coach in this league. And that's translating to results right now.
Sure. If you'd looked at the schedule at the start of the season, you look at the three games in Chicago and
take 2 points and run.
You would take 2 points and run.
Yep.
And never mind the fact that two of those three games in Chicago are second half of back-to-back contests.
Rangers and Dallas, yeah.
The first game is, you know, they played in New York the night before, came in, shut out the Blackhawks. Then, of course, last night playing Thursday night in Dallas, you come in and you win 4-2.
Different games, though.
Sure.
The first game, you're lucky to win. You were completely outplayed.
That's right.
Hutchinson stood on his head. Last night's game, you weren't. It's the evolution of the team, the way they're playing. The confidence level also is a factor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you had said at the beginning of the season, the Winnipeg Jets would go into Chicago and they would play 9 periods in Chicago and they would outscore the Blackhawks, you know, outscore them 10 to 3 in 9 periods in Chicago.
It's incredible.
It's absolutely incredible.
I personally think the turning point to the Jets season was that back-to-back Rangers-Chicago games early in the season. And the reason I say that is because the Jets were outplayed in both games. Pavlik stood on his head in the Rangers game. Mm-hmm. And Hutchinson stood on his head in the Chicago game. Prior to that, I know they had the Islanders and Devils before that, but prior to that, I don't think the Jets necessarily bought into the fact that they could win the 1-0, 2-1 games. They could win by playing defense. And I don't even think in those games they played particularly well defensively. Their goaltenders, as I mentioned, stood on their heads. But it was the way, Drew, that they were able to come out and say, oh, we won 1-0. We won by shutting them up. Maybe we can win this way. And I think Paul Maurice got them to buy into the fact that they got results there. And they've only played harder and far better defensively since then. To me, that was a turning point to the season, that back-to-back.
Let's get into last night's game. We start with the Blackhawks' first goal. It comes at the 53-second mark of the first period. Brandon Saad gets his 13th of the year, assist to Marian Hossa and Jonathan Toews.
Face off to the left of Crawford, and it's won by Chicago, and Hossa will get to center ice and chip it in. Bounce off a shin pad, picked up by Saad. A backhand shot, he scores! Brandon Saad! 53 seconds in, and it's 1-0 Blackhawks.
Not the start the Jets were looking for, obviously, there. And probably, you know, of all the shots that Michael Hutchinson faced last night, it wasn't an easy save per se, but it's one he wants to have back because he made a lot harder saves at different points in the game.
Yeah, and there's really, you know, you look at this play, it's kind of a 2-on-2 here, Drew. Nothing really the defense can do. Enstrom played. I thought Enstrom played a real nice game, you know, from what I saw, skating-wise, challenging the other team in terms with his speed, a Chicago team that has speed, but matching that speed, which is, you know, kind of goes back to your question earlier on in the segment. Brian Engblom did mention this on the broadcast. That backhand, you know, not a lot of players take backhands anymore, but they're hard to pick up. Where it's coming off the stick, what the angle is, if it's going to be raised or not raised, and this was a nice shot. I mean, shouldn't Michael Hutchinson probably have this one? You'd like him to. You know, because it was pretty far backhand, but credit to Brandon Saad. It's a beautiful shot, and defensively, I don't think there's much the Jets could have done here to say, oh, okay, you know, that's a breakdown we need to fix. It wasn't that case.
That's right. The Jets were able to tie it up, but before they were able to tie it up, Brian Bickell and Anthony Peluso dropped the gloves for a really good tilt between the two of them. Bickell had been taking some liberties with Jets players early on in the game, really trying to impose his will. Mm-hmm. Peluso answered the bell. Granted, he took an instigator penalty as well, but I think as Paul Maurice has said from the beginning of the season, I'm okay taking an instigator penalty if it means that you're standing up for teammates.
He's okay taking any penalty.
Yeah, well, really. That's all they've done.
You know, like, that's what they've done.
Yeah.
But he's been consistent in that regard. I don't think it's going to work long term, that idea of staying physical and all that and taking the penalties with it, because there's stick penalties in there need to fix. But the instigator penalty, Drew, I'm not particularly concerned about if it's Anthony Peluso. If it's Andrew Ladd, I don't want to lose him for 10 minutes. But sure. Anthony Peluso, they don't play the fourth line anyways. That's his role. You'll take the 2 minutes of sticking and to stick up for your teammate in that regard.
And you get Brian Bickell off the ice of, sure, of Chicago. No,
it's not the playoffs. He's not going to do anything.
Right. It's not the playoffs. He's not going to do anything. But it was a bit of a tone. It was a way for the Jets to say, we're not going to be intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, you've scored early in this game, but you're not going to run us out of this building. We're going to be in this game for all 60 minutes.
Absolutely.
Jets were able to, like I said, capitalized just after another penalty had expired, this one to Blake Wheeler. It's Zach Bogosian with his third of the year, assist to Andrew Ladd and Brian Little.
Pick up his own pass and backhanded from center all the way down inside the Chicago end. Ladd will crash and bash with Rundblad. Take the puck away. Come out in front. Andrew Ladd back to the point. Bogosian a shot. He scores! Zach Bogosian, hammer time, walking into the zone late. And it all started with a great forecheck by Andrew Ladd. And the Jets have tied it at one.
Zach Bogosian playing some very good hockey since returning from injury. Uh-huh. And what you see on this play, Richard, I mean, it is a beyond a soft play by Blackhawks defenseman David Rundblad here. Good play by Ladd, but soft is almost too complimentary about Rundblad's play here.
Well, I have one question before we start.
Okay.
You mentioned, can you read me the scoring summary again?
On that one, Zach Bogosian from Andrew Ladd and Brian Little.
Brian Little? David Rundblad goes into the corner, touches the puck, bails out on a forecheck by Andrew Ladd. How did Brian Little get an assist there?
Apparently, the scorekeeper must have been from Winnipeg
last night.
That's
unbelievable. Anyhow, the Andrew Ladd, you mentioned, Drew, it's a soft play by David Rundblad. You have to understand, that is why David Rundblad has gone from place to place in terms of trades, right? Traded from Ottawa, and I believe it was actually traded before that too, from Ottawa to Phoenix and now Arizona for Kyle Turris, a guy who's counted on moving the puck terrible in his own zone. And this is a prime example of it. Goes back, Andrew Ladd pressures him. Great job by Andrew Ladd here. And Redby completely gets pushed out of the play. A weak play by him. And everybody's chasing. Andrew Shaw's chasing. Chalmerson's trying to make up for it. But what great patience by Ladd to wait for the play, wait for Bogosian to come into the middle on his off wing, set him up for a slap shot and the goal. And just great patience. Great forecheck. Comes around the net. Beautiful pass and beautiful goal. One thing you have to note here also. A small play, and you really don't notice it maybe the first time you watch the goal, but a nice play here, by Jay Harrison. He just drives the net. And when he drives the net, what happens is it draws players down low, and it opens up Bogosian a little bit more and a little bit more room for that shot. So really nice execution here, and Andrew Ladd keys that play.
Want to interrupt right now. We have Ren Lavoie from TVA reporting that Matthew Perreault will miss some games because of the injury he suffered. But he's reporting that there is no fracture to the bone of Matthew Perreault's arm there.
Well, the timing then is good because it's the All-Star break coming up. I mean, never good timing, but better timing than the alternative. Yes. They had the Jets play Columbus on they play Arizona on Sunday, Columbus on Wednesday, and then they don't play again until the following Tuesday in Pittsburgh, correct?
That's good. That's correct. Yeah. So they are off for some period of time. So again, Ren Lavoie of TVA reporting that Matthew Perreault will miss some games after the cross check by Daniel Carcillo, but there's no fracture to his arm. So that's probably as good news as you could get after that incident last night. So it's 1-1 after the first period. The second period of last night's game, sort of, I called it, it was akin to a prize fight where the two heavyweight contenders are sort of feeling each other out mm-hmm. and conserving some energy for the final rounds. Not a lot happened in that second period last night. Again, besides the cross check by Carcillo, we'll play that later on. So not a lot happened besides that cross check. It was sort of a dull period mm-hmm. until the last 10 seconds of that second period last night.
And you know, Drew, when you got division rivals playing each other so often, they're really starting to get a, you know, you talk about the Carcillo-Perreault play, and that's going to create a rivalry, which I think from a kind of outside perspective is kind of good for hockey in terms of the teams hating each other. Sure. You don't want to see a guy get injured, obviously, but I like to see that kind of hate between the teams. It makes it more authentic. Mm-hmm. But you do see these teams, you know, it's a little bit of a feeling out process, but it's also you get to know each other so well, there aren't as many surprises.
Right.
You know, and so you kind of know what to expect, and then you kind of play that way. Like, it's, you know, it's kind of, when you're playing these teams that often, it kind of turns into a playoff series where you know the other team's going to do, you're just trying to stop it.
That's right.
Whereas if you play the Philadelphia Flyers or Pittsburgh Penguins once or twice a year, you don't really have too much of an idea. You have an idea what they're doing, but you don't get a feel because you play them twice and you're done.
That's right. There's not, and there's no opportunity really to have the resentment really breed.
You can't, you know, resentment's not going to carry over for 4 months.
Generally, unless it's the most egregious issue of all time, you're right. It's not going to carry over. Anyways, the Jets were able to take a 2-1 lead. It came on the power play at the 9:31 mark of the third period with Andrew Shaw in the penalty box after he took a holding penalty against Evander Kane. Brian Little gets his 17th of the year, assist to Zach Bogosian and Blake Wheeler.
Wheeler will come back and pick that up and start the attack back. Wheeler back across the line from Bogosian, moving in at the center of the net. A shot, they score! Brian Little took the pass from Bogosian, and he scores to make it 2-1 for Winnipeg on a power play goal. The third time Winnipeg with the man advantage, and they get their first goal with the man advantage here in this third period.
Beautiful play here. Yeah. Beautiful passing play by the starting with Blake Wheeler, and then Zach Bogosian slides it across to Brian Little. And I mean, what can you say about Zach Bogosian's play as of late?
It's been great.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know he can skate, but when he makes heady plays like that, then you're getting, oh, hold on a second. That's, you know, is that part of his game changing? I haven't seen enough of it yet to say that, but certainly that's a nice performance by him since his return from injury and trying to make hockey plays there. This is not your typical power play goal in that score off the rush, right? You're going to see usually your power play goals are on a set play or at least some kind of an arranged play in the offensive zone and a breakdown of the defensive coverage or whatever it may be. This is good speed from Blake Wheeler through the neutral zone. And as you know, if you watch the Jets enough, Blake Wheeler, who's a right winger, likes to take the puck down the left side, especially on the power play. That's one thing that the teams have generally taken away from the Jets in probably the last year or so since middle of last season. But here Wheeler's able to get some speed and it's a 3-on-3, really, Drew, and you got Seabrook, Taves, and Keith back. So you're thinking, well, I'm in pretty good position if I'm the Blackhawks. You know, it's kind of a 3-on-3 here, and we're not outnumbered. Mm-hmm. And then, kind of out of nowhere, for whatever reason, and that's a communication issue more than anything, Seabrook and Taves both go to Wheeler. both really good defensemen. Obviously, Taves, is a great defensive center.
Selke, nominee yearly.
And Seabrook's a great defensive defenseman. They both go at Wheeler. And Wheeler has a great recognition of that, and because he's a good offensive player, makes a pass across to Bogosian. What happens there is when the two guys in Chicago go to the Wheeler, Duncan Keith then has to come out to Bogosian. When Duncan Keith comes out to Bogosian, well, it's a classic play. Brian Little, as a 3-on-3, drives the middle of the net, drives the middle of the ice, goes to his offside on the left side of the goaltender, and because Seabrook and Taves both went to Wheeler, they're chasing now. Little's wide open, and a nice recognition by Wheeler to get to Bogosian, a nice pass by Bogosian over to Little. Execution's terrific there.
Yeah, absolutely, and the Jets lead 2-1. It's only 28 seconds later that the Jets make that a 3-1 lead. Chris Thorburn, who's now playing on the third line, replacing Evander Kane, who's moved up to the second line to replace Matthew Perreault. Chris Thorburn gets his third of the year, assist to Adam Lowry and Dustin Byfuglien.
Lowry to the puck for Halaschuk along the back wall. Halaschuk working there. Gets some help there from Lowry. Back to the line for Byfuglien. Byfuglien back for Lowry in the slot. Turns on a shot, though. Deflected in front. They score! Chris Thorburn, Johnny on the spot. And the Jets have scored twice within a minute and lead it 3-1. Baby!
The certain games, the Jets should have been, entering in the third period last night, the Jets should have been, tired, sort of running on fumes. And you can't help but wonder if they got sort of an extra boost of adrenaline because of what Daniel Carcillo did to Matthew Perreault. And they say, you know what, we're going to make them pay by winning the game. It's sort of almost the Carcillo cross-check served to motivate the Jets, I think, a little bit more than even being in a tied game would have.
Schedule's tough, too, Drew. I think Paul Maurice does an excellent job of setting up the media, or the fans, really, their expectations low. So 7-11. Do you think he's going to the room and saying 7-11 and making them think like it's difficult? He doesn't go in the room and say that, as far as I'm concerned. He's just pitching that to the media to set expectations lower.
That's right. He's giving low expectations in the media, but in the room, I'm sure he's not using that as
no,
an excuse
of course
at all.
I mean, everybody plays these runs of games. So sure, it's more difficult when you're playing on the second half of a back-to-back. Because you've had such solid goaltending, though, your goaltender is going to be fresh. The players know that their All-Star break's coming up in, 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to go on vacation. So, I mean, the energy factor here, this is not as if they're going, I got to play another 5 games in the next 10 days. They know tonight, that last night's game, Sunday, Wednesday, I'm on vacation for 5 days. And they all go away somewhere warm. So these guys know you can put a little bit more into this because you're going to get a little bit more rest coming up. I think the Carcillo, sure, it's a factor, but I also think, the depth of the Jets, you'd think maybe that would be a big issue, especially with the injuries, but they've overcome it.
Yeah. So. What did you think about the Thorburn goal?
Well, the goal here, I mean, again, you're Chicago. How do Keith and Seabrook get scored on by this line? I mean, that shouldn't be happening, right? Keith and Seabrook both front on this play, meaning that they stand in front of Chris Thorburn, who trickles behind the both defensemen. Now, of course, if there's going to be one guy behind, they probably don't mind if it's Chris Thorburn, but Adam Lowry gets the puck through, and if you front, you have to block the shot. And they didn't. The puck gets through, and then not only does it get through, but Thorburn tips it. So he's screening, and he tips it. Nice execution on a very simple play.
Yeah. 3-1 for the Jets at that point in time, and you're sort of 10 minutes to go, and they got to hold on tight. It only takes the Blackhawks 2 minutes and 44 seconds to respond. Yeah. Tuuvo Teravainen, his first career NHL goal, assist to Michael Roosevelt.
Back for Byfuglien, bouncing puck in behind his own net, but he got enough separation, got it up along the wing, but the Jets can't get it out. Send it back on it, front of shot, they score! Chicago pounces on a bad clear by the Jets in their own zone and makes it a one-goal hockey game. It's 3-2 Winnipeg.
Sort of just a scramble play, and he gets loose in the high slot.
Yeah, Byfuglien forces a breakout pass here, and he's got the puck, and he fires it to Michael Frolik, who's on the left side, but usually is a right winger, mm-hmm. even though he shoots left. People can follow that. But it's not Frolik's fault. The pass is a bad pass. He passes it right to Frolik, who's clearly they're going to be pressuring up on the winger. Defensemen are, and the opposing team is. Why? Because they're down 3-1.
Sure.
So they're going to be pressuring down on the wings. You can't make that pass. Puts the pass into traffic. The puck pops in front of the net, and then Byfuglien and Sherrod are both chasing because of the pass, and Byfuglien and Sherrod got switched on the back end. They're on opposite sides. So Byfuglien is now on Sherrod's side, doesn't get out in time to close on Teravainen, and there's a goal. It's a mistake. You're going to get those with Bufflin. He's going to bring you tremendous play like he has recently, but he's going to make some plays that you wonder once in a while.
Sure. 10 minutes to go. The Jets have the, or I guess 7 minutes and 15 seconds to go in the game. The Jets have the one goal lead, and they were really able to sort of clamp down for the final, you know, 7.5 minutes of the game. The Blackhawks had some opportunities, but they didn't have any terrific opportunities. Andrew Ladd ends the game in the empty net, his 17th of the year, assist to Wheeler and Bufflin. But really, from the 2 minute mark, with 2 minutes to go in the game, the Jets had the Blackhawks hemmed into their own zone, and the Blackhawks really couldn't get much going the opposite direction.
Absolutely right, Drew. I mean, I was impressed by some of the, you know, the pressure Andrew Ladd had earlier in the shift, the smart play by Wheeler to hold the puck on the empty netter and wait for the players to come to him, the play for Bufflin to get it out of the zone, and the execution defensively was very good, especially after the Anaheim and L.A. blown leads. You have to be awfully impressed if you're a Jets fan by that performance and sealing the deal when it mattered most.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to wrap up the segment. We'll play the Daniel Carcillo cross-check, and we'll talk about that.
Yep.
And then we're going to come back afterwards to discuss how the Jets are going to rearrange their forward lines. Here's the Daniel Carcillo cross-check. Nope, we don't have it right now. Okay, we'll go to break, and then we'll come back with the Carcillo cross-check. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
But we've got a pile up over at the hash marks on the far side of the Chicago end. Bufflin there trying to corral Seabrook and separate everybody. The linesmen are in there and a couple of players down on the ice. Perreault was hurt on that play.
It was a nasty cross check from Dan Carcillo on Perreault, and he is hurt. This is how the whole play starts. And this could be a big penalty as Carcillo is the one. Sherratt comes in after him, but yeah, Perreault very slow to get up. Carcillo has that type of reputation, and this is a nasty cross-check. Perreault does not look good.
Daniel Carcillo's cross-check to the arm of Jets forward Matthew Perreault last night late in the second period. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you're just joining us, reports are that Matthew Perreault, this is courtesy of Ren Lavoie of TVA, reports are that Matthew Perreault does not have a fracture after that cross-check. He's got a serious bruise, and he'll miss some games as a result. But all in all, no fracture is probably the best case scenario for the Winnipeg Jets and Mr. Perreault. As for what's going to happen to Daniel Carcillo, still no official word from the NHL, but some of the Chicago beat writers are reporting that there's nothing scheduled in terms of supplemental discipline, or a hearing regarding supplemental discipline has yet to be scheduled by the NHL Department of Player Safety. That's early on still. I have trouble believing that, given his reputation, given the fact it's Daniel Carcillo and not really anybody that anybody cares about in the NHL, that the Department of Player Safety will let that play go uncalled, unpunished, and unscathed.
To me, it's a suspendable offense. You have a repeat offender here, a guy, for my money, that doesn't even play the puck half the time he's on the ice. He runs around headshots. I mean, he's been doing this for years and years and years, whether he's in Philly, New York, L.A., Phoenix, wherever he may be. The guy doesn't, you know, and people keep employing him, and that's the thing. I mean, these teams keep signing him and letting him play a regular shift. And while once in a while he'll toss in a goal, most often he's just going out there and not playing the puck. And that's the most dangerous player, the player who doesn't play the puck, doesn't care where the puck is. And here is the same idea. Perreault doesn't have the puck.
Mm-hmm.
He goes behind him. If you remember, earlier in the game, Carcillo walloped him earlier in the first period. Now, that was a clean hit, you could say, and on the exact same part of the ice, because Carcillo playing left wing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and or he's on right wing there, excuse me, and he's coming in to take out Perreault. So he clearly is, well, one thing you can for sure say right now is that Carcillo's picking on the small guy. Classic Carcillo, you know, he's a rad, right? So those guys always pick on the guys that they can try and handle and take advantage of. Big guy, they're not going to go after. It's a dirty play. Unsuspecting, which is why he's going to get injured, because he can't brace himself for it.
Mm-hmm.
Should for sure be suspended. You know, and if the NHL, again, wants to be serious about these kind of players and this kind of plays, then you'll suspend him. And if you want to be the same old, you'll give him nothing. So we'll see. I know right now initial comments are that there, and the initial reports are that there's nothing's going to happen. We'll see about that.
I have trouble believing that. Just maybe if it
should be at least three games.
Yeah, maybe
at least three games.
If it's Jonathan Taves or, you know, that's somebody fine. Who doesn't have a reputation, and as a superstar in your league, maybe you can get away, you know, maybe you can sort of squint really hard and say, well, it's not as bad as it looked, blah, blah, blah. It's Daniel Carcillo, so the NHL is only putting themselves in the firing line if they choose to do absolutely nothing on this play. I mean, he comes in, like you said, it's blindside, it's the, you know, Perreault's not suspecting it. Carcillo comes from a top position, driving his stick, cross-checking Perreault on his arm. I mean, there's nothing about it that can be remotely considered a hockey play. The puck is nowhere to be found. There's no, you know, you're not playing the puck and accidentally, you know, you catch the guy. It's a, you know, it's about as dirty as you can get without it being a headshot. And, I mean, why would the NHL go to bat for Daniel Carcillo in this instance? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
And I don't know if they will, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, I agree with you. Courtesy Mark Lazarus, Daniel Carcillo didn't think his cross check was, quote, malicious. Said it was, quote, a hockey play. Quote, I hope he's okay. Recently, that's just what,
that's
Mark
what
Lazarus
said, you mean?
That's what Daniel Carcillo just said. Yeah, Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times reporting that quote exactly in that in those words. He didn't want to talk about the microscope he plays under. Carcillo didn't want to talk about the microscope he plays under, but acknowledged it. Quote, you guys know my reputation. So if Carcillo's acknowledging his reputation...
Well, I mean, he has to acknowledge his reputation. And what do you expect him to say, Drew? He's not going to indict himself by saying, oh, it was a stupid play. I should get a suspension. I mean, like, what do you expect him to say?
Nothing. I expect him to say something similar to that effect. But, I mean, you know, to say that I didn't think it was very malicious or anything. Okay, Daniel Carcillo. But like you said, what would you expect him to say?
And also, if he does that to Chris Sorbrunn probably doesn't get injured, turns around and socks him in the face. I mean, so depends on the, you know, he's an idiot. He's picking on that guy on purpose because he knows he's a smaller guy and he'll probably be more, he'll be easier to hurt.
Sure. You're right. He's, you know,
intimidate.
It's not even it's not agitating. It's just being dirty. There's a big difference between the two. Let's talk about the Jets forward lines. If Matthew Perreault misses some time, as it sounds like he's going to, at least probably the next two games before the All-Star break, I'm speculating. Evander Kane moves up to be that, really, the second line left winger with Scheifele and Frolik. And then Chris Thorburn slides in to play with Lowry and Halaschuk. And maybe Gagliardi comes back on the fourth line. Is that just sort of the simple response?
Yeah, probably. I think you want to keep size on the Lowry line, though. And by Thorburn moving up to that line with Halaschuk and Thorburn and Lowry kind of being bigger guys, you'll have a little bit more of that size. I wouldn't be... The problem is, it depends on how you're going to play it, right? If you're going to rotate your three lines, the question is, do you want Gagliardi to play a left-wing role on the second line, as opposed to, you know, Thorburn playing a left-wing role on the third line? I guess that's probably what you're asking yourself. Because remember, they're really going to be a three-line team here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the question there. And I don't know yet. I mean, those are probably two of the options they're considering. You're obviously not going to break up the top line. It's been tremendous. So you're going to say, okay, your fourth line is, you know, Slater and Pelusa are going to be there. It's going to be Thorburn. And that's only your only question. It's going to be Thorburn in there or Gagliardi in there. And based on what Paul Maurice has done in the past, it's going to be Thorburn. And I guess the question is, my only question maybe is do you keep Kane with Lowry, try and balance a little bit more, and maybe throw Thorburn up consistently with Scheifele and Frolik? I don't know about that.
Keep the scoring sort of a little more spread out rather than...
Yeah, but the problem is that Perreault's been the driving force behind the scoring on that second line.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't been Scheifele. You know, they play poorly, or Frolik has played well, but I think Perreault's been the reason for that strong play. Probably the main reason for that strong play. So then, where's the puck going through? Well, it's probably going to go through Scheifele or Frolik there. Do you want a guy who can score a little more like Kane? But then if you do that, then are you really hurting your third line, which you likely are?
Well, but the benefit...
But again, you're going up against Arizona and Columbus, right? That's so, right. I mean, that's the two teams you have to worry about right now, and those teams aren't exactly scoring whenever at will. So it might not be as much of a concern. If that's the case, I'd probably go with, you know, how we did it last night.
Yeah, I from my perspective, I mean, you're sort of in a fortuitous part of your schedule with the All-Star break coming up, and your two opponents aren't world beaters. You have Arizona, who's really putting up a for sale sign and doing a fire sale on the entire team. the players, not the franchise, I guess, in this instance. Yeah. And then the Blue Jackets, who have obviously been struggling for the majority of this year. I'd like to see Kane and Scheifele back together, because we really haven't seen much of them together this season.
Kane and whoever. Kane is what he is. Drew, I don't think any of these, Matt, I personally don't think there's going to be any big change in terms of who he's playing with and such. I mean, Scheifele has played with him for periods of time, not long periods, as you mentioned. I kind of like that Kane is just kind of left on an island on the third line, and I think the team has fared better with him there, because it just, you know, he just does what he's going to do, and for a third line, he's really effective. Second line, first line, there's more pressure to score. And if you have more pressure to score, and sometimes you don't mesh well with the other players, then there's an issue. So I kind of like, that's why I toss out the other option. I like Kane on that third line, giving them a little more depth, right? I like that three-line depth, and granted, the problem is that Thorburn as a left winger, first of all, he's a right winger.
Sure.
Thorburn as a left winger, I mean, he's not going to play any sort of style like Perreault. They don't have anybody like that.
Right.
That's why his signing was so important. So it's not a great options either way. But I do prefer Kane with Lowry in that third line than I do in the second line.
And it'll be interesting to see what Paul Maurice does ahead of tomorrow night's Jets-Coyotes game. That game at 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we're going to look at the Jets and how they currently stand in the playoff positioning in the Western Conference. Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Richard, the Winnipeg Jets have played 46 games so far in their 82-game schedule. Good enough for 56 points, a record of 24-14-8. Two games above 500 when looking at it strictly on the basis of victories. 6 points ahead of the Los Angeles Kings in the wild card standings. 7 points ahead of the Calgary Flames. Yet only 2 points behind both the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. Is it legitimate for the Jets to turn their attention to getting out of the wild card and being one of the top teams in the actual Central Division?
It's always legitimate to have aspirations of doing that. I mean, I don't know if it's... I'm not going to say it's unrealistic, because they're only, as you mentioned, 2 points back. Now, both of those teams who are good teams have two games in hand.
Sure.
So, and Nashville's 3 games in hand with 8 points up. So it's going to be tough to catch any of those teams. That speaks to how tough the division is, Drew. But sure, of course, I mean, you want to always look at the team ahead of you and chase it, as opposed to looking at the team behind you and trying to, you know, keep pace that way. Now, in reality, you're going to keep eye on both. And people who tell you the players don't look at the standings, that's a load of crap, really, because we know that they do. And we know that they're always checking the standings. In this day and age with the three-point game and how the parity, these guys are checking the standings all the time. They know exactly where they are. So I certainly think that the Jets can point their attention to St. Louis and Chicago. Now, to that point, Drew, Chicago comes here twice more.
Mm-hmm.
The one comment you could say is, well, hey, beat them 3 times. Who says they can't beat them twice more? The alternative is, and they're playing them at home 2 games. The alternative is, you're not going to beat Chicago 5 times. St. Louis, you're playing them 4 times. So you have 6 games against those two teams to make up ground. But it's awfully tough to take a lot of points off those teams. And we're talking about 46 games, you know, into the season here. So there's about just under half a season left. But again, to make up a lot of ground, that's kind of difficult. So we're saying, oh, it's a 2 points ground. But say those teams keep up their pace on that points, and it's 5 points.
Sure.
For both.
Given the games in hand.
It's not easy.
The Jets have the best road record in the NHL, 14-5-5. It's their home record that they've sort of been struggling, 10-9-3. How important is it, in your mind, for the Jets to win these next two games at home, tomorrow night against Arizona, Wednesday night against Columbus, to get up to the 500 home record, which is sort of the flip side to what you expect, in that, you know, you go into the season, you say, we want to be 500 on the road and have a solid home record, and that will get us into the playoffs. So the Jets are sort of performing backwards when it comes to where they're performing better.
You have to win. I've said it on the show before. You have to improve your home record for sure. You have to beat bad teams. And Columbus, better team than they were earlier in the season with injuries and such. But these aren't two teams that are really nowhere close to contending, right?
Sure.
So you have to take care of business, especially at home. And you're going to have a day here. You're going to have a couple of days after tomorrow's game for a Columbus team. And you're playing on national TV on both occasions. So you're going to have some publicity and things to look forward to. And again, the All-Star break. So these are two games you got to take. And now you could basically say that about every game now.
Yeah.
But especially against teams that, again, we went into that back-to-back there saying, okay, the Jets need to take 2 of 4 against Dallas Chicago. They're going and take 4. So now, of course, when they're playing against teams that aren't as good, you need to take those points.
Well, it's right now the Jets have earned 6 points in their last 3 games, a perfect record. And if you go back to the Los Angeles game, like you said earlier, it's 9 of 10. But it's right there for the taking that the Jets should earn, in their last 7 games, they should earn 13 out of a possible 14 points.
Which would be obviously great. And you look at the teams below them. Well, you have Los Angeles and Calgary. Now, Calgary is 2 games in hand. We keep talking about games in hand, but you got to win those games in hand.
Right.
And they're creating a lot of distance here. I mean, they have 7 more regulation overtime wins than Colorado. The win over Dallas was huge. I mean, Colorado and Dallas going to catch the Jets down 9 points and 11 points respectively. I think Calgary's... I don't really think those teams are starting to... The Jets are starting to distance themselves from the team below them. Aside from Calgary, who has 2 games in hand and 7 points back, that's not that close either.
Yeah.
We speak about the chasing Chicago and St. Louis. Well, conversely, the same thing applies with the teams chasing the Jets in terms of points and games played.
Sure. As the Jets gain ground on the teams ahead of them, the teams behind them are playing decent hockey and to some extent keeping pace, but the Jets are still putting a fair bit of distance between them and the Calgary Flames, who everyone's expecting them are still going to sort of drop as the season progresses, given that no one expected them to be this good for this long. Colorado and Dallas, that win in Dallas where you didn't deserve any points, and to get 2 clean points in Dallas on Thursday night was absolutely huge for the Jets, and really... I mean, you don't want to say, sort of eliminates Dallas from the competition, but like you said, 11 points there, Richard. That's a lot of points for Dallas to have to make up ground on.
And you have to also understand, Drew, that Jimmy Neal has a long-term perspective on this. He will sell before buying.
That's right.
If they fall out of it, they're not going to be. They're going to sell before buying. And by that, I mean they'll trade a player or two from their active roster, probably be worse off for the remainder of the season to improve long-term. And by doing that, we'll become less of a competitor for the Jets in terms of a playoff spot if they already are one right now, which you could argue they are close to not being one.
Well, the team that's of most interest to me, especially given that they've now acquired a goaltender who should hopefully be able to shore up their biggest weakness,
too
is
late,
the Minnesota
though.
Wild.
Too late.
You're sticking with that? That's too late?
Too late.
I mean, is it too late for them to catch Los Angeles? Or is it too late for them to catch the Jets and Los Angeles?
Too late for them to catch the Jets, for sure.
13 points?
They're not. 13 points.
I know, it's a ton of points.
No chance. Maybe LA, because LA's got injuries too, and now Toffoli and Pearson and obviously Voinov's in a situation. So there's some injuries there. Jets are getting Trouba back. If Perreault's not out for too long, the Jets are going to be completely healthy and having impressively weathered the storm throughout those injuries. So, I don't think there's any chance of catching the Jets.
Well, you're entering
the All-Star break. He didn't act quick enough. Didn't address a goaltending quick enough.
Chuck Fletcher, the Minnesota Wild, you're saying.
Yeah, he was signing all those guys long-term, and to be honest with you, all those deals I thought were pretty good. But maybe he should have changed his focus to short-term, because that's more pressing, and I think they've probably lost season. And sure, you hear Ryan Stewart talking about the fact he's minus 20 in the last 20 games or so, and whatever you want to say about plus-minus, if Ryan Stewart's minus 20, you're not going to be winning any games. And he said all the bounces are going the wrong way and stuff. Sure, but you need a goaltender to stop some of those.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look back at 1 year of Paul Maurice as the Winnipeg Jets head coach. Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You're always looking to be ahead of where you are. I'm pleased at what I believe are the starting points to an identity for our group. We've been a good starting, very consistent team. We're still trying to get 4 or 5 things down on a pretty regular basis, and I think that those things, the biggest thing that I'm happy with is the compete and leadership in our room. I think we compete hard every night. We probably cross that line more than smart people would say we should, but I think there might be a little advantage in that too. But the leadership in the room, the togetherness is maybe ahead of where I had hoped it would be.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice speaking about his 1 year in office as the Winnipeg Jets head boss. 370 days ago, Richard Pollock, Paul Maurice was hired as the Winnipeg Jets head coach. And in that span of 1 year and almost one exact full season worth of NHL games in 41 games, pardon me, in 81 games, Paul Maurice has accumulated a record of 42, 26, and 13. When the Jets hired Paul Maurice, and I mean, we were on air breaking that news on that Sunday morning. Did you expect this amount of success?
No. Do you want to have revisionist history here? I thought the hiring was a solid but unspectacular hire. I thought that he had a track record of being a National Hockey League coach, solid coach, and done a really nice job. Of course, going to finals with Carolina, but. Never having the most talented teams, granted, and, being your solid NHL coach, kind of in line with what the Jets probably would hire. Nothing too risky, nothing too, not going to be overly talkative with the media and things like that. And I think that's held true. But done a terrific job here. Impressed and certainly exceeded my expectations as an objective observer. And teams buying in, playing really well. And what can you say? I mean, it's only compliments for the job he's done. To me, he's second in line for the coach of the year to Peter Laviolette. Certainly probably some Barry Trotz. I would have third, those three. He's ready to Jack Adams candidate for sure. That's how good of a job he's done.
You look at the roster, and it's pretty much, more or less the same roster that we've seen for the last number of years. There's been some additions and some, through the draft. And
pro additions, big addition.
And, odds and ends, parts here or there. Why has he been able to get so much more out of these players that, for years, you don't hear the word culture talked about in the Jets dressing room?
I want to speak to that for a quick second. I mean, where's the talk about Atlanta 5 or whatever they called it, or where's the talk about Atlanta this or Atlanta that? I mean, that suddenly is a storyline that has gone by the wayside. I didn't like that storyline to begin with. I mean, what does that really mean? Those same five guys are on this team.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that's just an aside. But back to your question in terms of the culture. Paul Maurice and his team talk the same way. That's when you know they're on the same page. Same message throughout. We're going to do this. We're going to compete. We're going to all that stuff, all the catchphrases. But the team talks the same way as the coach does. And lots of it, if you listen to the actual meeting, doesn't mean much. Like, it's just a bunch of words.
Sure.
But they're saying the same things and they're buying into it. And again, they're not giving the media as much, and that's fine. That's they're entitled to do that. But that's the idea, is that when coach and players say different things, not on the same page, this team, same page.
Are you surprised that he's been able to get them to buy in so quickly? I mean, he comes in, like you said, he's got a track record as an NHL head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, Claude Noel, the coach previous, everybody liked Claude. He was a friendly guy and he was always good with a quote and everything else. He didn't have that same track record.
Yeah.
And probably won't ever have a track record of being an NHL head coach, and that's okay. I mean, he's probably one of the top 50 professional coaches in the world. Might not be one of the top 30 and NHL coaches in the world right now. Are you surprised at how, at Paul Maurice, a guy who had sort of an average record as an NHL head coach, was sort of a nothing spectacular, nothing flashy, mm-hmm. at how much he's been able to get out of the same team for the most part?
And there's some notes as I said earlier. I mean, there's some notes here. Michael Hutchinson's been terrific.
Sure.
Progression of Mark Scheifele, and to a greater extent, the progression of Jacob Trouba.
Mm-hmm.
The addition of Matthew Perreault. So there are changes there.
Yeah, there's absolutely changes.
Let's not understate the fact that there have been changes. But to your point, Drew, there haven't been massive overhauls. Certainly, there's not been big changes by Kevin Cheveldayoff. And Adam Lowry, of course, has joined the team as well. So there are some roster changes there.
It's a much more talented team than there was, last year, the year before. No one's arguing that.
But, I mean, it's to me, it's the buy-in. I mean, it's, again, back to what I said in the first segment, playing hard. Consistently playing hard and consistently back-checking and defending. That's the biggest difference for me. The back-checking, the defensive awareness, defensive work ethic, and the overall physicality and the playing hard. That's the thing. They're more physical than they were before. And, Trouba was physical last year. So I think that's a team thing. mm-hmm. for sure. Perreault's not physical. Okay? So that's, I mean, Lowry is, but that's a team thing. More physical, they play harder, and they play far better defensively. That, those are the big keys to me in terms of a night-in, night-out effort.
Do you get the impression that this is a closer-knit team?
Winning breeds closer-knit teams in many cases.
Just the success makes people a lot... it makes you want to be around people a lot more?
100%. You want to come to the rink more, you're having more fun, you feel better about yourself, you're happier to be around guys. You can tolerate the guy next to you when you're winning. If you're losing, you can't stand him.
Sure, you don't mind.
It's like an office. If things are going well, that guy's bothering you, but it's fine. It's the same thing, guys. You're going to work, same idea. But if things are struggling here and if you want to use a radio example, if there's a difficulty in ratings and there's pressure here, and pressure, people are going to be more agitated. Things are going well. It's fine. And the things that agitate you don't agitate you as they would otherwise. That's what it is. The team's going well right now. And you want to keep it going. And then the players want to continue to feel good about themselves. So they want to continue to play hard. Coach wants to send the same message. Continue to stay on them. I mean, this all goes together. And people sometimes forget that these guys are, they get paid ridiculous amounts of money, and which they're entitled to because that's what the market bears. But the point is, they're going to work the same as other people in a different way, but still going to work. Still go to work with people that they like and don't like. And if things are going well at work, they feel better about that, and things don't bother them as they would in other cases.
Sure. I mean, to that point, you think about, because when you play hockey with your buddies,
same idea.
You're all friends, and really the game doesn't matter as much. But when you go to the office, there's some people you like at the office, and some people you don't. So it's the same idea when it comes to a hockey team in that sense. When Maurice comes in, are you surprised? I mean, it's just been the transition has been so seamless, really. And I'm surprised that
has it, though? I mean, the beginning of this season was, it could have gone either way.
Sure. But I mean, how quickly did that turn? I mean, it only, they had their struggles.
What if they lose in New York? That's why I talk about New York and Chicago being the turning point. What if they lose both those games? What's their record in that point, and do they buy in at all? Sometimes it happens, too. Part of it, most of it I'm saying is a credit to them. Some of it's a goaltending, too.
Sure. And I mean,
lots of obvious is goaltending, but.
And I mean, okay, then how about the, I mean, he comes in, Paul Maurice.
But that's not to take anything away from him. You know what I think about the job he's done so far. And with a guy who didn't have the lowest of expectations, but I didn't have the highest of expectations.
No, you thought he was
I thought they'd be in the playoff race and they'd give it a run and they'd probably fade away at the end of the season.
You thought he was in just, an NHL head coach, somewhere in the mushy middle of all the different NHL head coaches.
Yeah, that's right.
But is he an upper echelon head coach now?
I mean, I don't think you can say that based on a season. Like half of a season and half of a season kind of thing. I don't think you can say that, Drew.
Sure.
I mean, he's not Mike Babcock. But, I mean, maybe he turns into that here. Maybe, again, the teams he had in the past places weren't the most talented. And, of course, he had that cup run in 0-2. And if not for that Larionov goal, it was game two in 2002. And maybe the Canes win that game. Maybe they do make a miraculous win the cup there. So,
Is this the most talented team you think he's had in a long... Is this more talented, say, than that Carolina Hurricanes team? Now, I know it was almost a dozen years ago now, but the
more talented defensively than... remember, you have to understand something. In Carolina, he never had a go-to defenseman. In Toronto, he really never had a go-to defenseman. I'm talking go-to guy. He didn't have a Buff or a Trouba. You could say he didn't really have a Bogosian or an Enstrom almost. In Chicago, those Carolina teams are mishmashes of talent. Nicholas Wallin's guys who can get the job done. But nothing spectacular. You should pull up the Carolina defense roster from 2002. We can go over it. Pull up the Toronto roster he had on defense in those years. Now, remember, those teams had better offensive players. You're talking Roddy Brind'Amour, Ronnie Francis. You don't have any of those guys here. I mean, with due respect to the great job that Little Lad and Wheeler have done this year. I mean, Ronnie Francis, Hall of Famer. Roddy Brind'Amour, you can certainly argue, is going to be a Hall of Famer. Tremendous two-way center that were able to push them to different levels than they had reached before. And of course, a great player of Arthur Zerbe in those runs as well. And again, that goes to goaltending. But the defensemen that he had on those teams, even the defensemen that the Carolina Hurricanes had when they won the Cup under Peter Laviolette, probably the only team in the past 30, 40 years, they didn't really have that go-to guy in the back end.
Well, here's their defense from the 2001-02 Carolina Hurricanes. Glenn Wesley.
Glenn Wesley, solid guy. He's your probably second line left side guy, Glenn Wesley, in those days.
Yeah. Aaron Ward.
I mean, Aaron Ward's going to get the puck out of his own zone, clear the front of the net. Nothing spectacular. Not the best skater.
Merrick Malik.
Again, solid guy who's going to get do the simple play. Not offensively, overly offensively gifted, notwithstanding his shootout goal in New York.
Yeah. The legs.
Your solid guy. He's, again, a guy who uses his long stick, not the most mobile.
Brett Hedekin.
great skater. But again, Brett Hedekin is not a dominant defenseman. None of these guys are top two defensemen.
Sure. Nicholas Wallin.
Solid stay-at-home guy, block shots.
Sandis Ozilinch.
Completely offensively gifted, a disaster in his own zone.
And then the last four guys were sort of,
you can name
nobody of any excitement.
Who? You name him?
Stephen Holko.
Yeah, I can tell you anything about him.
Sean Hill.
Sean Hill's a good skater.
Yeah.
He moved the puck right. He's a small guy, though.
David.
A little dirty, though, Sean Hill.
Say that again?
He was dirty.
Actually. He was dirty? Yeah. David Tanabe.
He played with Shane Knight in Ottawa. David Tanabe is a great skater. Could not think the game at all. So, I mean, again, you got a lot of limitations here.
Yeah. I mean, this was not a who's who of... of top flight NHLers.
Yeah.
Their offense was better, like you mentioned.
Think about the defensive talent he has here. You could argue Buffon, Bogosian, Enstrom, and Truba are all more talented than any of the guys he had in the team that went to the Cup.
Well, if Zach Bogosian, the biggest knock on Zach Bogosian has been the way he thinks the game. That he might not have the hockey sense necessary to really have been the third overall pick like he was.
Because he had two nice plays last night. I want you to think you hope that that thing comes around. But I would be shocked. I would be very surprised if he turned into that next level defenseman.
Right. I mean, I don't think that he's obviously going to become the smartest player that they, on the roster.
Yeah.
But if the game slows down a little bit for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is for Bufflin and like it is for Truba.
Yeah.
Because you see those guys when they play, the game is slow for them. Because
Bufflin is especially slow for offensively.
Yeah. I mean,
meaning that he can kind of see
plan
it better.
Two,
see,
three
Bufflin
plays
sees
ahead.
The ice better than anybody in the Jets.
And probably top 10 in the NHL.
I don't know about that, but I mean, high up there.
Yeah, high up there. So if Bogosian could just sort of improve that a little bit. I mean, we talked about it, the last couple weeks. If the Jets get Bogosian and Bufflin and Truba on their right side.
But I mean, again, what are they going to do when that happens? I think that's a difficult question to ask. And what's Bufflin going to command, and what are the contract issues? Now, Pomerantz, that's not his problem, but it is his problem. It's not his problem because he doesn't control that.
Right.
In terms of long term.
But he's got to allocate 60 minutes of...
But I mean, Jay Harrison got brought in, so clearly he has a say in personnel decisions in some way.
Sure, which you should. You should consult your coach.
Well, I agree.
Hey, you know this guy?
I agree. I'm saying, but what are you going to do, right? Bufflin's going to want money.
Yeah. That's the big wild card that the Jets are going to have to keep an eye on. And I mean, I don't think you sign Bufflin this offseason by any stretch of the imagination.
What are you going to sign him? What are you going to do then?
I think you wait to see what his play is like in the beginning of next year.
You're not going
to
get... Nah, I disagree. You better know by next summer what you're doing. Otherwise, you're trading it.
By this summer?
Sign him or trade him. Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
You don't wait longer. No, I wouldn't wait. Well, the cap situation, you want to make sure you have as much flexibility as possible marketing-wise.
Yeah. Well, let's head to break. When we come back, Adam Proto from the Hockey News is going to join us. We'll talk about the NHL in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 12.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news. Is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a columnist with the Hockey News, Adam Proto. Adam, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Always my pleasure to come on, and thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, of course, Adam. Brought you on. We'll go around the NHL for a general discussion, but obviously we're here in Winnipeg, so we got to start with the hometown Winnipeg Jets. Not sure if you've had an opportunity to see much of the Jets as of late, but if so, so what are your impressions of this Winnipeg Jets team that is firmly in the first wild card spot and that head coach Paul Maurice has playing some very good hockey?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, guys, I didn't really, like a lot of people, I think, have really high hopes for the Jets this season. I think they're, most people that are being reasonable would say that this is a team that's in transition and building and trying to, make its way through the world today, as they say, in that tough Western Conference. So, I always thought people should kind of temper their expectations, and maybe they did. Maybe that's why it's been a little bit easier for this team to play under Paul Maurice. You don't have the fan expectation that you're going to be better than Chicago or LA, because frankly you shouldn't. And I think most savvy Jets fans understand that it's still going to be a process. You're still going to have some games that are going to be ugly, some that are going to be really ugly. But to see the development there, to see some of the acquisitions, the Kevin Shelebayoff has made, start to pay off. I think you have to feel good about the future, and it's just now a question of You know, what is the move that's going to put you, vault you into that upper echelon? Is it just time and patience? I think, you know, sometimes we forget that that's exactly what it should be, right? I mean, people look at Andre Kopitar in LA. How many years did Andre Kopitar, you know, struggle and not ascend to the top of the NHL before he got there, where he is the past couple of years? I think, you know, sometimes, especially in Canada, we get a little overzealous, a little hyper-focused on things, and we expect too much from young players. So as long as people are able to kind of continue to keep that in check in Winnipeg, I think, you know, you're probably going to be pleasantly surprised.
Adam, did you have a chance to see Daniel Carcillo's cross-check yesterday on Matthew Perreault?
I sure did.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you see there being supplemental discipline? It appears there may not be, but that's not yet been confirmed.
Yeah, you know, guys, I mean, I think my reputation precedes me in some of these things. I think supplemental discipline should almost always be harsher. Mm-hmm. You know, should have been harsher on Brad Marchand the other night. So, yeah. You know, it's not like I'm talking about Daniel Carcillo in a vacuum. I think, you know, this is a league, and you have to blame the Players Association, too. I mean, when this league had the chance to do it right, to really address, you know, some of the ongoing issues with the respect the players have for each other on the ice, that was during the last collective bargaining agreement, and they didn't do it. They, you know, the money was focused first and foremost. And I think, to be honest, if you talk to players, there's some natural skepticism, right? Of, you know, if we increase the fines, you know, who are we punishing? Are we punishing ourselves? Like, our contracts are disappearing anyway. Do we want to give the league a chance to take even more of a bite out of it? So I understand the hesitation from the player side. But I think that's where the NHL either has to step in and say, look, you know, if we're pushing to get the one-dimensional enforcers out of the game, we have to also be willing at the same time to step up and punish, you know, the vultures of the world. You know, and I'd put Dan Carcillo in that category. I think he's a guy that plays over the line, I think, you know, or plays on the line, and you know, tacit in that sentence, guys, is always he's allowed to go over, right? You don't say he plays on the line to somebody, you know, like a Henrik Sedin, because you know he's never going to go over it, right? But this plays on the line garbage, it just makes me laugh, because it is, to me, just a tacit excuse for letting these guys, you know, to continue to pay lip service. I think Marchand did another one of his contrite, oh, geez, heaven forfend, what have I done here? I guess I'll never do it again. And he'll do it again, just like Matt Cup did it again, just like Chris Simon did it again. You can go right down the list of guys who understand that the financial penalty isn't going to be punitive enough for them to do what is required almost to keep them on an NHL roster.
And Adam, on that point, I mean, I mentioned earlier in the show in the first hour that, I mean, teams keep employing these players.
Yep, absolutely. And, I mean, Daniel Carcillo has been, I mean, where's the guy played? L.A., Chicago, I mean, New York City. Like, he has not been hidden away by the league whatsoever. And so, you know, is he tied with Brad Richards now? That made me laugh over the holidays for the number of Winter Classics. Like, is this the guy that you want to showcase on Winter Classic after Winter Classic? So it is, to me, it is still a structural issue, right? That, and you know, Steve Downey's kind of cleaned up his game a little bit, but he's still got that tendency too. So there are these entire class of players. Patrick Coletta was another one. I mean, they are in lots of markets, just not in every market, where, you know, people, again, it's the stupid NHL mentality of an arms race, where if you guys have one guy that's, you know, potentially to go off at any moment, we're going to have to get one too. I don't see what it ever does for them in terms of, you know, an actual contribution. I know that, you know, the stats bear out the idea that any time these guys pull something like this, it doesn't really do much for anything for them on the ice. So I think they're kind of a relic and an anachronism of a time that, you know, is pretty much long gone in hockey now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Adam Proto. Adam's a columnist with the Hockey News. Adam, we just sort of passed the halfway point, or last Saturday we actually passed the halfway point in terms of games played so far in the NHL. In your mind, are the Nashville Predators and their success the biggest surprise story so far this season?
Yeah, I think so, only because of the degree of it, guys, and the sustained nature of it. I mean, you know, look at Calgary. People thought Calgary would drop off a bit, and sure enough, that's happened. It hasn't happened in Nashville, and it may well now that the Pecorini's on the sidelines. And, you know, I wrote a small thing for our website the other day on, you know, the relative dilemma, I guess, that David Poyle has in terms of maybe looking for a short-term veteran replacement. I'm not sure that I'd put all my marbles behind Carter Hutton, you know, to kind of hold the fort there. So, you know, I think they've got a really interesting team. It's almost like you know, a bad news bears type of thing going on in a way with, you know, Ribeiro and Jokinen and some people that, that really weren't wanted. You know, but they also have a, you know, a deceptively deep defense. I mean, Roman Yossi's a, developed into a pretty neat player for them. We all know about Weber and Seth Jones. So, you know, to me, when you look at what gets you success and, you know, what gets you deep in playoff runs, it's always about the overall depth on your roster. It's always about, you know, that sense that, that somebody else will step up. I don't know that that depth is completely there throughout the lineup. And if there was another, you know, key injury to a guy like Philip Forsberg or someone like that, I think they might be a little bit more challenged to kind of hold that spot. But no doubt about it. I mean, you know, the move of Barry Trotz out of that city was probably overdue. He acknowledged it. He got a great reception last night that was, you know, quite emotional and touching. And Peter Laviolette gets a kind of fresh slate with a lot of kids. So I think, you know, it was probably the exact right move they should have made. And just getting Pekka Rinne healthy back has clearly done a lot for them.
Adam, you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, a complete mess. I mean, we need to turn on the TV and listen to the problems of the Maple Leafs for the first 10 minutes of every sports show. It's nauseating.
Oh, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, who to keep, who to get, who, you know, who cares? But I'm going to ask anyways. I guess my first question is, do you think Dave Nonis lasts past the season? And I guess on that point, the second part of that question is, if he doesn't last past, like if he gets fired, if he, you expect him to get fired after the season, why would he be the guy making any moves right now?
Yeah, no, to answer your first part of your question, I don't expect he'll be the GM by the time the Leafs get to the draft table at the summer. I think that's probably when it's going to happen, the day after the season ends, whether that's the regular season or the first round of the playoffs. I don't think anybody really imagines this team is going to do much, you know, to salvage his job. I think the same feeling was there about Randy Carlyle, and now the focus has turned to him, guys. And so, yeah, I think he's, you know, he's basically done. I'm sorry, your second part of your question slipped my mind. You better re-ask me.
Well, do you think that, you know, if you just said you don't think he'll be the GM when it comes to the draft? Like, should he be the one making moves then up to the trade deadline?
Right. No. And you know what? To be honest, I don't really think he is. I think, yeah, you know, there are a lot of people out there that, you know, not to say that, you know, Dave Nonis just shows up to work and twiddles his thumbs and looks out the window all day, but, you know, the name Greg Sherman ring a bell to anybody? I mean, this is the situation that I think they're looking at in Toronto. And to be completely honest, I think Brendan Shanahan, once Dave Nonis is gone, is going to take that GM job. I mean, people were talking about potential replacements for GM. I don't think, if you really read the tea leaves there, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Brendan will be the guy that says, okay, I've had a year to look at this team. I've had a year to get perspective. And people will say, well, you didn't have this experience. You didn't train, you know, you didn't take any experience at the management level. You sure you're with the NHL, but you didn't really apprentice the usual way. And I think, you know, that's true, but really, if you look at the history of the NHL, guys arrive in the seats of power much different ways. Lou Lamoriello, you know, who most people acknowledge as the, you know, one of the best GMs of his time, when he got hired, he was hired as the president of the New Jersey Devils first. He was also, at that time, charged with finding a GM. Guess who he picked?
Himself.
Lou Lamoriello. Sure. He did the Dick Cheney, right? He did the Dick Cheney employment search. So, you know, I think that's exactly what's going to happen in Toronto, and I don't think, you know, Leafs fans should necessarily be upset by that just because of a lack of experience. I think what they should be happiest about is, you know, that Brendan Shanahan and my conversations with him and my conversations about him with other people connected with the team, I think finally, at last, they've got somebody who has the, you know, the political capital and the actual will to sit behind a long-term rebuild. And whether that means trading Phil Kessel right away or, you know, or maybe waiting another year or two to move him, I think, you know, they recognize just as well as anybody now that they brought in, you know, some fancy stats people and they've really changed the organization. They know that the group that they have is just not going to get a cut. And, you know, with a few exceptions like Morgan Riley and Michael Nylander, I think you're not going to, William Nylander, I should get that right. I think there are very, very few untouchables left, as they said. And now it's just going to be a question of who do you build around? And I do think Brendan Shanahan's already really making those decisions in fact. So to me, Dave Nonis is a lame duck guy who probably does get input and does have, you know, maybe more say. His voice is worth more in the overall consensus, but the guy making the ultimate decisions is Brendan Shanahan.
Adam, sticking in the Eastern Conference, if you were to open up your local newspaper today and look at the conference standings, the New York Islanders are first overall in the East. Mm-hmm. Are they the favorite to represent the East in the Stanley Cup Finals now?
Oof, that's a good question. I can't believe this question's been asked me. I think I was 8 years old in 1984, 1982, when you last talked about the New York Islanders like that. I mean, I'm not so sure, guys. I like the Tampa Bay Lightning before the start of the season. I still do. I think, you know, they've got some issues with losing Gudas. Does take a bit of a bite, but to me, they've got one of the deeper defense corps in the league. I thought it was probably the deepest one in the Eastern Conference, even with, you know, even before Boston traded Boychuk to the Islanders. So I think the Islanders are another one of those teams that are still locked in the process. They, you know, they look to have finally made that jump from, you know, the fringe team, you know, fringe playoff team to a team that can contend, you know, for the top of its division, the top of a conference, and that's got to be great news. And I think, you know, they are going to get better, but they're going to still have some growing pains. They still have to get that group acclimated and accustomed to the different, you know, pressure and intensity changes from round to round in the playoffs. I'm not sure their depth is 100% great either. That will get them through a couple rounds if you have some key injuries. But, man, I said before the season, guys, I did a feature on Kyle Okpozo, for the yearbook. And, you know, the more I talked to people around that organization, people were like, you know, look at what Kyle Okpozo did last season when John Tavares was injured. He didn't falter. He didn't, you know, wilt away. He didn't show that it was still all about John Tavares. He played very, very well in his absence. So to see that guy, you know, start to light it up and really be one of the most consistent players, not just on that team, but probably in the league, you know, in terms of his position, really blossom into that kind of power forward. You know, I think that's maybe not as big a reason as John Tavares overall, because he is still the straw that stirs the drink there, but you know, the blossoming of Kyle Okpozo has really taken the heat off of Tavares and allowed them to spread out the minutes and the time and the pressure on everybody, and I think that's one of the real keys to their success.
Final question for you, Adam. Trade deadline, you know, coming up closer than people may think, March 2nd here, and Monday, March 2nd. Do you expect a ton of action? You know, I've kind of been saying on the show that you have, to me, six or seven really bad teams, and then a bunch of teams in the middle who aren't really sure what they are, and I'm not sure if that's going to create a bunch of action or no action. What do you expect?
Yeah, I think we'll see the usual depth deals, guys. I mean, you know, that's usually what GMs know, again, going in about the war of attrition that is the playoffs. So, you know, I think you'll see some of those fifth and sixth defensemen maybe change hands. Goaltending, you know, Buffalo's got a couple players that, you know, and Roth and Neuwirth, you know, that could help a team. I don't think you'll necessarily see blockbusters just because, you know, to your point, I think too many teams think they're close and teams are so frightful of, you know, making a poor decision, especially when they look back and see a Philip Forsberg for Martin Jurek trade not hanging too far in the past. And I think the other thing we got to remember, guys, is first round picks, I don't think you're really going to get traded anymore. I mean, you know, the third round pick for Devin Dubnyk, you know, was made because, you know, I'm sure Chuck Fletcher could have had Martin Jones if he wanted to take him off Dean Lombardi's hands. But it would have cost him a whole lot more than a third rounder. It would have cost him at least a first rounder. It would have cost him probably, you know, a very, very good prospect beyond that. So, I do kind of expect that, you know, the typical Jim Rutherford trades that happen in advance of the trade deadline. And I think there are going to be quite a few of those, more toward the depth end than the superstar end. And even though it was a bit of a flurry last year at the trade deadline, I don't expect all that much this year.
Adam Proto is a columnist with the Hockey News. Adam, we appreciate your time, and thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's always my pleasure, guys. Thanks again.
Take care, Adam. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at tomorrow evening's Jets-Coyotes game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to the Hockey News' Adam Proto for joining us to talk about, really, the league in general, the Winnipeg Jets, Daniel Carcillo, everything under the sun. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and, of course, on IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204- 487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Still to come on the show in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Sean Burke, the Arizona Coyotes assistant to the general manager, which is somehow different than assistant general manager, and their goaltending coach as well, so you can look forward to that in the next couple minutes. Jets-Coyotes tomorrow night, 6 p.m., game you can hear live on TSN 1290 and on TSN1290.ca. Richard, does Paul Maurice just walk into that dressing room and remind the team of really how the Coyotes handled them about 10 days ago and use that as the motivation?
I think so. I think you're probably right about that, Drew. I think you use that plus the motivation to get up for a team like that. Again, you're on national TV. That usually helps in terms of motivation. I think also you're playing so well lately that you have to build on that too. So there's a number of fronts I think he's going to be going at them. But, you know, this is a team, again, Arizona, that you have to take care of business, Drew. I mean, you've blown them out once at home, and then you basically got blown out there. And you look at their roster, and there's a bunch of guys here that, you know, most hockey fans probably, and good hockey fans, probably won't know a lot of names.
You're not familiar with Lucas Lesio?
That's what I mean. So, I mean, I'm not personally familiar with Lucas Lesio. There may be some fans that are, but, you know, you're looking at the Hanzel, Bodker, Gagne line and the Erat, Vermette, and you said Lesio line, and the other lines are just going to be your checking lines. So, and that top six group there is not a high-scoring group. So long as you can just create a little offense against this team, you should be okay. Of course, you know, on the power play, they've been better, and they create offense from the back end, so that requires team approach. And if Matthew Perreault's not playing, we can expect that he will not be playing tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Then the Jets' offense, you know, especially that secondary scoring, is going to suffer a little bit, and you can expect Oliver Ekman-Larsson to get a steady diet of the top line of the Jets, Wheeler, Ladd, and Little. So, I mean, there's, you know, this is not... The Jets should win this game, but everybody knows in the NHL... There's no easy games, and when you're playing against a team like this or against Florida, to me, you got to get on them early. Remember, Arizona's playing tonight in Minnesota.
That's right. It's the second half of a back-to-back for the Coyotes.
And again, you know, I talked earlier in the show about the fact that these guys know All-Star break's coming up, so they can give it and know they're going to get a little bit of a rest period here. Second half of a back-to-back, and not every team plays like the Jets did last night in those circumstances, so you take advantage, and I think you get on them early. And when you get on them early and you know, you make them chase. And if you're making this team chase, which you didn't until the other game, you know, about a week ago, I think they're going to be in trouble because they're going to take chances to create offense because they don't have enough skill. Like if you get up on, say, the Blackhawks, they don't have to take chances to beat you throughout mm-hmm. the game. They'll play their game and they'll create chances. Arizona's going to have to take chances to beat you. And if they take chances, you try and capitalize and transition, especially on neutral zone turnovers.
That's right. I mean, you look at the Coyotes and really their biggest offensive threat in terms of their forwards is Mikhail Bodker at this point in time. We're not sure yet about Martin Hanzel's status. He has been banged up and missed a number of games as of late. So it's Bodker is your biggest threat. I mean, and this is a Coyotes team that's certainly in flux. I mean, there's a lot of trade rumors circulating around the team. We saw Devan Dubnyk get traded away, so Mike Smith's the goalie of record there.
And they're selling now. I mean, yeah. Antoine Vermette will be traded.
Yeah. There's talk that Keith Yandel might go.
I think Keith Yandel will likely go.
Zbigniew Michalak will probably go. He's a UFA at the end of this season. There's a lot of guys in Phoenix who probably aren't there for the long term. You know, even maybe Sam Gagner goes or Marty Erat if they could somehow get somebody.
Yeah, I mean, again, who are your building blocks here?
Well,
Ekman-Larsson is your building block.
Yeah, Bodker's a building block.
We'll have to sign him, too. I believe he's an RFA after this
year. He's an RFA after this
year. So, I mean, you have to sign him, and he's a building block. But that's not an awful lot of building blocks there. And there's been this is kind of a under-the-radar story. Sure, they have Max Domi and different guys coming through, but the development of Brandon Gormley is certainly taking longer than they expected. I don't love Brandon Gormley's game.
He was a first-round pick in 2010, 13th overall for the Coyotes.
So it's tough when you miss on first-round picks. Not saying that they missed yet. It's only 2015 here, but you would have liked to see it. I know defensemen develop slower, but that's an awful long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's taken a while here. And so there's that, you know, they don't have that. They don't have the depth. I mean, they were an older team, and they don't have the depth or the roster that they had before. And that's why they're not very, you know, you could play that style all you want, but they just don't have the players to play that style, and they have the depth. Their defensemen are more offensively oriented than defensively oriented.
They've probably held on to this roster for a little bit too long. I mean, if you look back at the last couple of drafts, you know, Domi was drafted 12th overall. The year after that, Brendan Perlini was drafted 12th overall. So the Coyotes were similar to the Jets, in fact, in that bad spot where you're not good enough to make the playoffs, you're not bad enough to bottom out, And it's, you know, right now it's, you know, they're bad this year. But are they bad enough to be in the...
Well, they probably will be.
Well, to be in the McDavid Eichel sweepstakes?
Well, I was looking at, you know, that before the show, Drew. I mean, they kind of are. And you look at how close they are to that bottom five.
Yeah, they're in the bottom five.
Yeah,
but,
so,
I mean,
you're only 7 points up at Edmonton if you're going to sell everybody.
Yeah. You should be selling everybody immediately, trying not to
win.
That's
what they're
going to
do. I mean, Buffalo, Carolina, I mean, all these teams are going to sell. That's what I said. You know, you have your bottom three, four, five teams that are terrible, and you have your top teams, and you have everybody else. And if you can identify, and we're going to ask Sean Brick about this, if you are, you know, you're a clear seller. We know that that team's a seller. We know Arizona's a seller. Mm-hmm. So is that an advantage for you? Because the Dubnyk trade was done earlier than the other trade. I like that. If I'm a Coyotes fan.
Yeah, there's no point in holding on to these guys to win, you know, I guess you got, what, 6 weeks until the trade deadline. There's no point in holding on to these guys to win five more games
that's
over
right.
the next 6 weeks.
You just want to make sure you can maximize the asset.
Yeah, you want to make, that's yeah. right, you want to get the most you can for it, but not at the expense of winning a few more games where you can potentially, you know, play yourself out of the bottom two spots.
So the Jets are playing against a team that tomorrow, that no, like Florida is not as talented as the Jets, but and they're in the playoff race in the East. Arizona's
back
done.
To Tuesday night's
Arizona's
game.
Done.
Yeah. Arizona's done. The Jets, you know, took advantage of a weakened opponent on Tuesday night against the Panthers.
But Tina was playing well. Different circumstances than that. They're in a long trip. Arizona's coming here. Sure, they played last night. But the point is that they know the season, they're not winning the cup, and they're not making the playoffs. So that being said, you have guys on this team, Drew, let's be honest here. You have guys on this team who are playing to make themselves more marketable in the trade deadline, with the trade deadline upcoming. And to that point, I mean, you play well, you go to a contender, you have a chance to win the cup. That's what's on the mind of these players.
And you get a better contract as
Absolutely.
You enter into UFA
Absolutely.
Status either this year or next.
Absolutely.
If the Jets play like they played against Chicago, you know, you play up that
No, level. The Jets play like they're doing in Chicago, they'll win 4-0.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, and it won't be a difficult game.
No.
Not that, I mean, the schedule is, you know, a little bit easier now. I mean, after, you know, they're done with all of their, you know, back-to-backs and everything else for the next little bit. They've survived, you know, what was being talked about as being a very difficult schedule. And now this is the time, tonight and then Wednesday night against Columbus,
yeah.
is the time to sort of reap those rewards. And you go into the All-Star break having earned 13 of 14 points. That is, I mean, just a tremendous feat for the Winnipeg Jets at that point in time. We'll see tomorrow night, game time, 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Hustler and Lawless will kick off our coverage at 3 o'clock, followed by Rick Ralph and the pregame show at 5. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Coyotes assistant to the general manager and goaltending coach, Sean Burke. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.